Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, what's up? And welcome to a brand new episode of Serious Issues, a comic book podcast hosted by me, Andrew Levins, and her,
Siobhan Coombs.
That's your name.
I'm me.
Great intro. First of all, thank you so much for everyone coming to our first live episode last week. It was a live episode slash Serious Issues and King's Comics take over a nightclub at Hudson Ballroom. We filled the room kind of with people and comics.
Yeah, that was impressive. I thought it could have just been comics, but it turned out people showed up too.
There were certainly more people. Actually, there were definitely more comics than people.
No, there were heaps of comics. but yeah, thanks everyone for coming down. It was cool to see that we can do that sort of thing and people will show up, and also that there is an interest in old back issues and stuff like that, and people really do love having a dig through, so...
Yeah, definitely. Nice. And we recorded our live episode, which was the big reveal of who won... our comic book awards. Thanks again if you voted. And thanks especially if you are a creator who voted for yourself. We're going to be putting that episode up. I'm going to try and do it before Christmas.
Nice.
And that you can spend your Christmas with your loved ones listening to a slightly badly recorded hour of Siobhan and I telling people to shut the fuck up so we can announce the winners. and also, we've got another bonus episode that I recorded.
Another boner episode.
Another boner episode, guys. We did it. Steele Saunders, who hosts Steel Wars, the Star Wars podcast, and the I Love Green Guide Letters podcast, both recorded from Melbourne. He was up in Sydney doing a live episode of both of those podcasts over the weekend. And after I was a guest on Steel Wars, alongside Karen Wheatley and Angus Truscott from HeyFam, I stole Steel, and we did a... like a good hour and a half on what we think. We basically tried to make a decision on what was the best Star Wars comic that Marvel put out since they took the Star Wars license.
Nice. That's interesting.
So if I get the live episode out before Christmas, I'll try and get that episode out before New Year's.
Was it the C-3PO one shot?
No, he hated that.
Aww.
I actually can't even remember, possibly because I was drinking. I can't remember what we said was the best one. But there was it's lots of really great arguments because I read the comics because I like comics, and he reads the comics because he loves Star Wars.
I feel like it's a very different perspective to come from.
Yeah. While we are thanking, in the business of thanking people.
Yes. I just wanted to say a big thank you to everyone who comes every month to Queens of Kings. It's been such a brilliant first year for us. It's been, it's my favorite thing to do. Sorry, Levins. but it's, genuinely, we've built this unbelievable group of intelligent, kind, respectful women with incredible taste in comics, and it's the most fun thing ever. So thank you to everyone for coming to the last one. Thank you to everyone who brought snacks. There's so many snacks at King's Comics right now. It's so good. And I look forward to seeing you all in the new year. We've already planned the next book is going to be Mockingbird.
So great.
I think that should be a fun one.
So that means the trade of that is out.
Yeah, the first trade of Mockingbird is out.
Amazing. We fucked up. We should have done a Christmas recommendation list.
Yeah.
So let's just put that in there.
Yeah.
Get that. Get the Vision trades. Get the Prince of Cats hardcover from Image.
Yeah, absolutely.
And get whatever else we say we like in this episode.
There's tons of recommendations. Guys, you should have been making a list all this year.
So let's kick off with the bulk of this episode. And that is what we do every single week. We read all of the comics that come out each week, courtesy of our good friends at King's Comics, which you can visit if you're in Sydney.
310 Pitt Street.
Or kingscomics.com. You can buy any of the comics that we talk about from there. We tell you which of those comics you should be reading too. we begin every episode with a little segment called First Things First, in which we review all of the brand new number ones that came out last week. And oh boy, I mean, as a whole, I thought people wind, like comic companies wind down towards the end of the year. This week and next week are two of the most bulked weeks we've ever done.
Yeah, yeah. No, like the comic community has no time for your Christmas celebrations.
In fact, they add to it by doing fucking holiday specials, which I kind of love.
Yeah,
so both DC and Marvel had some big number ones this week. Should we flip a coin for DC and Marvel number ones? It is the season.
That's highly unorthodox.
It's a season to be jolly, and I'm going to be jolly with this coin toss.
Great.
I forgot to say, heads is what?
Heads is DC.
Heads is DC. It was tails. We're going to talk about Marvel's number ones first.
All right.
We're going to talk about the... Actually, you know what? Fuck that. I'm going to be even more unorthodox and ignore the tale. Because we're talking about holiday specials. We're talking about number ones. And I think the biggest, or certainly the most expensive holiday special that came out this week was the DC Rebirth holiday special.
$10.
$10
for buckaroos. A single issue. How ludicrous is that?
How much does that translate to in Australian comic dollars?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Probably about $15.
$50?
$50.
But... This is a, you know, as you can see on the front cover, you've got Batman, Harley Quinn, Superman, Superman's son, Batman's son, Wonder Woman, Batgirl, Kid Flash, and the Green Lantern. So it's a few stars and reluctant stars of the Rebirth books that we've been reviewing since they rebirthed midway through this year. This is an anthology book with lots of different writers. The entire book is put together, kind of held together by a pretty fun narration written by Paul Dini. It's basically Harley Quinn kind of strings the whole thing together, putting on
hasn't
like a pageant.
Been what's strung together? Like, hasn't Harley strung together pretty much every special, like seasonal special that DC has done recently?
If she has, they have not been done anywhere near as well as they have in this.
Yeah.
They're actually, like, I found... You know, this is the classic thing where, like, the stories get worse as the book continues.
I know, it's so funny.
But I found all of her interactions, especially, like, you know, just recently we read the Batman Christmas special and Paul Dini wrote a Harley Quinn book in that, a story in that, which I couldn't stand. But I loved his fourth wall breaking Harley Quinn in this. Like, she constantly makes references to how dumb holiday specials are and how pointless they are and... You know, always talking directly to you as the audience, but I actually found it quite endearing and fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed this. It is full of classic Paul Dini stuff. So it's got both like really classic looking Zatanna and Black Canary. And man, I find like Holly is such a difficult character, but it's so funny seeing her played in one book for like she's simultaneously played for like gross out laughs, but she's still like extremely sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's, I find it a really weird thing. So I now feel quite weirded out by like cute, sexy Harley. Cause I'm used to like, I lick shit off my hands, Harley.
Oh yeah, that's right. The,
you know what I mean?
She actually,
that's
lick
really
shit off
stuck
hands
in my brain.
Yeah. But I thought this was good kind of classic, not too over the top sexy Harley.
Yeah. 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 This is like, it's more cute.
Calling back to Bruce Timm's version of Harley Quinn. So do you want to point out some of our favorite stories in this? I enjoyed this. The first, it was like a, you know, what's that? What's the Arnold Schwarzenegger Jingle All the Way?
There's
a Superman and Batman take the roles of, or Superman takes the role of Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, trying to get some very sought after toy for his son, John. Turns out Damian wants it as well. And there's this cute kind of fatherly moment, yet another amazing fatherly moment in the DC universe this year. We also have a great story called For the Dog Who Has Everything, which is another little heartwarming Superman and his family, and including Crypto, kind of working out that he's had a crazy year. My favorite story in this was the Detective Chimp
story.
And I'm getting in before you say, obviously, it's the best one.
Obviously, that was the best one. It was always going to be the best one.
Detective Chimp is a chimp who is a detective. Need I say more?
He wears
a suit, he has a hat, and he's a better detective than Batman. Yep.
And this had such fun art by someone who I've never heard of before.
Gustavo Duarte.
Very good. Really enjoyable. I also really enjoyed the Wonder Woman Constantine story by Mariko Tamaki and with art by Matthias Bergara.
Yeah, so that was fantastic. That was like better than anything I've read Hellblazer in this year.
Yeah, totally. And that's Mariko Tamaki is the person who's going to be writing Hulk soon.
Oh, great.
So get keen for that.
That's great.
Mm.
The Flash one was pretty good, written by James Tynion IV. I was confused at some points as to what they were referring to. Like, there was like a weird flashback in two panels to... a kid on Christmas morning. I don't know who that was meant to be.
I think it's supposed to be Barry because he's like, I grew up in foster care.
Right. Okay, sure. Cool. All right, I thought that was maybe how Captain Cold grew up. But that was a nice little story. Hated the new Superman two-pager. The Batwoman story is probably the lowest point of this book, with really awful art and a bizarre story about hacking.
Yeah,
hacking in
weird.
Comics is never good. It's never impressive, and everyone should
Oracle.
Stop it. What's that? Sorry.
Unless it's Oracle.
Oh, I'll get more on that later. the Titans one was rubbish, and the Green Lanterns one was rubbish.
Yeah, the Green Lanterns one, like, it's just so funny how it was. Like, I feel like it is literally every single Green Lantern comic that I've read with those two Green Lanterns is like, A, it's got that really annoying first-person narration. That's
not
like,
only is it first-person, but my name is Jessica Cruz,
yeah,
and I am a Green Lantern. It's like, yeah, we know, because it says Jessica Cruz in Green Lantern.
So. Yeah, yeah. But then it's also just always about her having, like, emotional issues or whatever. Like, just fight some space monsters.
Transcend that. Like, you're not...
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like that's a good role...
No.
Model to just be like, have someone that's constantly defeated or trying to battle.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Write her rising above this.
Yeah, totally. Like,
I know that is unrealistic in the real world, but like, I don't know. What's
It's just that it's like, it's just heaps boring.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway.
We don't read that anymore, so it was annoying to have to read in this. Instead of continuing down DC number ones, let's compare this to the other holiday special that came out this week.
Oh, I didn't read that.
You did not read the Gwenpool holiday special.
No.
I understand why you would not, because Gwenpool's in it, and Gwenpool is a character that doesn't appeal to us at all. But there was a story in this written by Ryan North.
Oh, amazing.
Who writes Jughead and The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. And this is a world in which Galactus has replaced Santa Claus.
Amazing.
And it is so stupidly funny.
That sounds amazing.
It's
got Fin Fang Foom in
it?
Yep.
Red Skull, MODOK, and Thanos versus Miles Morales. And no one... Like, so Galactus takes... You know, no one believes... You're not meant to believe in Galactus because you're an adult. And no one believes it's actually real. And it is so silly and goofy. And, you know, Galactus ends up saving the day. But Miles can't tell anybody that he did because no one believes him. It's great.
That sounds so fun.
It's like the perfect story, perfect example of the kind of story you want out of one of these, you know, pretty goofy holiday specials.
Yeah.
Pretty much every other story in this completely sucked,
including nice.
including a for no reason Deadpool Halloween story at the end.
Oh yeah.
I don't know why it was.
That makes sense.
This was $6 US. Maybe not worth buying just for the Ryan North story. I probably still would have bought it, but. It's really, really great. If someone has this, borrow it. Maybe, like, you know, it'll take you about 5 minutes to read it. So find a comfortable corner in your comic book store and don't dog ear the corners.
Please don't.
Just
actually,
it.
No, I cannot support that message at all. Do not read shit without buying it in a comic book store. That is a dick move. That is a dick move. You are stealing.
'Tis the season to be unorthodox. all right, let's stay in Marvel territory now. The big number one that came out this week was Hawkeye number one by Kelly Thompson, Leonardo Romero, and Jordi Belair. And this is all about Kate Bishop as Hawkeye in Venice Beach, California, starting her own private agency.
Private investigation.
She's trying to be a PI, like her good friend Jessica Jones. More on her later. This was great.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I think that Romero is a really good artist, except potentially in the action scenes. They were, like, a little bit static, I thought.
Right.
I just, like, she's so sassy. Like, Kate Bishop is so sassy. I don't find it, like... I think that the way that Matt Fraction wrote her was like a little bit more human and a little bit more like genuine. Like I don't necessarily find this particularly like a genuine voice, if that makes sense.
Sure. Okay.
I did enjoy it. I did enjoy it. And it was nice to see, like, we were talking in Queens of Kings about how annoying it is in like action movies when chicks don't have their hair, like, they haven't put their hair up, because imagine how annoying it would be, like, flying into battle with Scarlett Johansson's, like, perfect curls all around you. And there's, like, a funny bit where she puts her hair in a ponytail before she sort of swings into action. And I was like, yeah, justified. Great. But, like, I enjoyed this enough to continue reading it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I get that, and they're definitely on that, you know, note of it being unrealistic as a character when characters just become a quip machine.
Yeah.
Especially when the jokes aren't necessarily funny. They're just like, yeah, it's just sass, sass, sass. She even makes reference to her being sassy.
Yeah, yeah. She, like, there's a, like, the first bit where I was like, oh, because the page before I'd been like, yes, this is incredible. And then the next page she goes like, are you ready for sass or something like yeah. that? And I was like, maybe not.
There's enough sass, like enough kind of like attitude coming through subtext as well, like yeah. to you don't have to actually have her say sassy things as well. Like,
yeah.
Or she could think them, you know, I don't know. Yeah, but yeah, you're right. It definitely was a little bit overbearing, but I still really enjoyed this. I love Romero's art. Even though it reminded me a lot of David Ayer, but that's
yeah,
a good,
but that's not a complaint. Thing. On a Hawkeye book, that's almost that's a good move.
So we'll see where this goes. It's yeah. likely this is. I really like Kelly Thompson as again. She's another younger writer.
Yeah, is she the person who wrote the Pink Ranger comic?
Yes.
Yeah. So I enjoyed that more than this.
And the Star Wars annual that we read recently about the girl who helps yes, Princess Leia.
I enjoyed that more
and,
as well.
And Mega Princess, which you like. I really like. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So yeah, cool. Definitely. There are lots of younger writers now that are writing like fucking 10 books at once.
Yeah, but I know.
I guess they're all maybe limited series.
That's what happens. Then they burn out.
Yeah. over to Image now.
You didn't read.
You're right. We should talk about the big Marvel book. I was trying to actually. You know what? This wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Inhumans versus X-Men #1. We read #0 a few weeks ago, and I was like, oh boy, I'm not looking forward to this event that's just going to go to a fucking march in which the Inhumans and the X-Men finally fight again. But this one's once and for all, guys.
Once and really this time. Now it's war. Everyone's going to talk for heaps longer, but now it's war.
Because you wanted to talk about it, you have to tell everybody what the plot is.
Getting the band together or something.
That is not what happened in this book.
Just all the X-Men got together. So, okay, Beast goes to the rest of the X-Men and is like, look, guys, it turns out that we actually can't cure the Mpox. We can't get rid of the cloud. So our options are we all stay here and die or we move off planet. Everyone make their choice. And everyone goes, no way, Beast, you fucking
Inhuman turncoat. Lover.
Yeah. We're going to knock you out and do our own war, and then Emma Frost is going to seduce Black Bolt.
And Dazzle's in it.
Yeah, and Dazzle's in it too.
That was fun. Dazzle's great. Dazzle's great. That was a beautiful plot. But it basically shows different X-Men going out and taking different Inhumans off the map. So yep. We have like Jean Grey trapping Karnak mm-hmm. in his own mind, and I'm very amused by the one page cameo of one of my favorite mutants,
yep.
Phantom X, being forced to take out Lockjaw.
That was pretty good.
He didn't. No, they are, beside, yeah, they're mostly kind of non violent, or at least, you know, capturing, yeah. not killing. So I appreciated that. But yeah, they're basically, there's a big green cloud full of Terrigen mist that's like getting bigger and bigger around the world. It gives Inhumans their powers, but it also kills X-Men. So the X-Men are going to take that cloud out once and for all.
But is that? I thought that they said that they couldn't do that now. So I don't really understand what the actual X-Men end goal is. We just incapacitate the Inhumans, and then we still all die.
I don't know. Maybe Emma Frost has a plan. Do you like?
Ooh. Sorry, I just noticed that in the final page where they're like, now we fight, Colossus has a beard again.
Oh, yeah, wow.
I love beardy Colossus.
Was there a... Did we miss an arc
high
in
point
which
of
he,
the issue.
Yeah, did we miss like a one-shot in which he decided to grow a beard back?
I don't know, but that's a one-shot I want to read.
Oh, look, and Matey from...
Thingo. Strong Guy?
Strong Guy from... Matey from Thingo. Strong Guy's in the background. I love those stupid pages where it's everybody kind of impossibly flying.
Yeah, like everyone jumping at each other.
But then there's just like two guys just standing here with like their arms crossed at the background. Like, where are they in the world? Are they on Iceman's ice? I don't know.
I don't know. We'll never know. I'm not going to lie. I don't think this is Len Liu's best work.
I mean, it's a big, big bumper issue.
It is a huge issue.
I definitely thought that a few times throughout the issue. This is written by Lemire and Charles Soule.
But X-Men, I think the key problem is that I was trying to explain this to someone, and like trying to explain who the X-Men actually are right now is so... It's still just too annoying. It's too annoying to bother.
Send like, the Young Mutants back.
Yeah, and send Old Man Logan back too. Because everyone was like, our Queens of Kings. Everyone was like, is Wolverine alive? And I was like, no, but Old Man Logan is. So yes, I guess. Like, it's just the dumbest. And there's two Beasts.
Yeah.
And one of them's not even Dark Beast. What's the point?
I mean, I don't even like Rachel Grey. And she's been in comics... For like from a oh, separate yeah. timeline for
I
so long.
I still don't understand Madeline yeah, yeah. Pryor. Like,
yeah,
this is too much. X-Men universe.
So
is too much.
Apparently, like we already know the X-Men win this battle.
What do we?
Yeah, well, because the X-Men have like fucking 11 new titles.
Starting yeah.
in Ugh. March next year. So anyway,
Marvel ruin everything again with solicitations. Nice one, Marvel.
That's how they do things now. So yeah, I'm still gonna read these. That's the thing. Even though like for all my complaints about Marvel and to DC to a point, but like. Oh, no, Marvel are definitely a bit better at it than DC. They'll put out a book that I don't like that I still want to read. And that makes
That's
me
mental.
Part of the problem. We're going to talk about them later. Like, the one writer is putting out constantly all of them.
Yes.
And we review them all. Back to DC now for Injustice Ground Zero. Did you read this one?
That.
Yeah,
I
more
like
Harley Quinn. So, Injustice, based on the video game in which all the DC heroes and villains fight each other and lots of them die. This one retells the original story from Harley Quinn's perspective.
That's what I needed.
Half of this comic is her just retelling what happens in the first Injustice series from her point of view. And then we kind of see this... Then we just kind of see this one scene of her breaking into a thing to steal green pills or something. Like, I know that sounds terrible. For some reason, I read every page of this. And I might even read the second one.
People really like the Injustice comics. Is this being written by Tom Taylor?
No, Brian Buccellato. Buccellato?
I have no idea.
Cappuccino.
Hmm.
And Christopher Sabella as well.
Oh, delightful.
But I don't know. There was something not terrible about this, even though it was terrible.
That's nice. That's a good endorsement.
Put that on the cover of issue two. Cool. Can we move away? Oh, no, we've still got another Marvel book.
Yeah.
We forgot about. I loved this.
Really?
Doctor Strange and the Punisher, Magic Bullets. I think this was a Marvel Unlimited digital comic first, and they collected the first few. Written by John Barber and Jason Moore, with art by Andrea Brocato. This is. Do you remember in that Original Sin event? One of the highlights of that, which is written by Jason Aaron, who is now writing Doctor Strange, but he wrote Doctor Strange and Punisher kind of teaming up to... Like, Nick Fury teamed up a bunch of different people in the Marvel Universe. and they had to go on, like, separate little missions to find things for him. And across a few issues, it was the team up. And it worked really well. It was really cool. So, they've done an entire series about Doctor Strange and the Punisher teaming up. It's called Magic Bullets. And issue one came out, and it involves the Punisher kind of doing his like classic killing all the mobsters in New York, and then he discovers a room full of magic bullshit and decides to give old Doctor Strange a call. And they're very unlikely companions. I really enjoyed that there's a moment where you see Doctor Strange, who, you know, this follows the continuity of there being no more magic in the world, and it apes Chris Pacello's style really well during these scenes where we see Doctor Strange in battle. I appreciate things like that. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? Where they not only do they reference what's happening to the character within the bigger universe, but they pay tribute to the artist that's currently writing that, you know, drawing that stuff.
Yeah. I thought it was a slightly sassy version of the Punisher.
Yeah, yeah. I like that, though. I feel like no other character, everyone has a different version of the Punisher.
Yeah, I feel like he's generally just like a really tough, silent guy, right? Isn't that his entire
character?
Yeah,
but sometimes he's tougher, sometimes he is more silent. I mean, the
many shades of grey.
In the regular comics, not the Max ones, Garth Ennis's Punisher was a talker.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he was a Frankenstein monster for a while.
Yeah, remember when he was Frankenstein, guys?
I like that.
That's ridiculous. I thought this was totally fine.
This was absolute popcorn.
Was absolutely.
That's why I liked
acceptable.
It was a I just turned the pages and enjoyed it and didn't think while I was reading it.
I think the cover is the best thing about it.
Okay.
That's
well,
a nice cover.
I'm going to keep reading this. About you? How about you?
Nah, probably not.
Ba-bow. Who did the cover of this? Cover is great. Michael Walsh.
There you go.
Good on you, Walshy. I read Rockstars.
I did too.
Issue 1 on Image, written by Joe Harris with art by Megan Hutchison. Art is the better thing in this book.
I think that's actively good.
No, the better.
Oh, right.
The better. Like, I enjoy the art side of this more than the writing. It is the premise that they kind of hint on in the first few pages. I was like, oh, fuck yeah, this will be great. It's all about mysteries in rock and roll. Mm. The backwards messages that we hear in classic albums. People that are lost, you know, girls, groupies that get lost. Death hoaxes, you know, the Paul McCartney is dead kind of thing. And this kid is a, you know, aspiring rock and roller who also wants to be a detective that solves these rock and roll mysteries.
Mm.
And I was like, man, this is going to be great. But then we kind of get this weird kind of lackluster tale of two would-be groupies getting killed by demons.
But then they're groupies that live forever as scary demons or something.
Yeah. And I just thought it was quite confusing to follow because it kind of jumps back and forth in time without markers of which era you're reading at the time. And our character seems to age and de-age throughout the... I wasn't sure if we were seeing two different timelines of him too, the main guy character, the main detective. And then there's this vague media...
Chick
as well who... I don't know. This book didn't go where I wanted it to go.
But I feel like it still could. You know what I mean?
That's
I feel
true.
Like I'm going to give it another couple of issues. And I really enjoyed the art, actually. I think it's very like... cool and different and suits the story incredibly well.
It has some really great backup material. It's a great package, this thing. It has like a bunch of writings about rock and roll mysteries and about eras and recommending other books about classic rock and roll. This book references, you know, the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, all that kind of stuff throughout it. So there's going to be a lot of tales from that side of things too. I'm going to give it exactly one more issue.
Nice.
Because... often vague things do get explained eventually.
Yeah, totally.
Two Transformers comics started this week, and I thought I would read at least one of them, and then I read both of them.
You're bonkers.
So, out of one called Transformers Lost Light, and this one, the description of this is, like, baffling. This is... okay. The Lost Light lives on. 5 years ago, Rodimus and a collection of traumatized, lovelorn, and or sarcastic Autobots...
Like, what?
Why would you describe Autobots, massive robots, as lovelorn and or sarcastic?
Because they have... I don't understand.
Why are those the two things? They set off on a quest to find Cyber Utopia. So far, they've made a right hash of it. They've misplaced their map. They've lost their ship, the Lost Light, to a mutinous escapologist. Oh, and they're dead.
What?
So, what do you think?
Can robots even be alive?
So, that was one of them, Lost Light, and the other one was an Optimus Prime comic.
Huh.
So, which of those two do you think would be the more reader-friendly, easy to get through?
Just because you set it up like that, I'm going to say Lost Light.
The Optimus Prime comic made no fucking sense. It starts off with, like, previously, and it has like all this panel with so much text. Like, my biggest problem with the Transformers comics, and I've only tried to get into them, you know, granted I may not be doing, I'm always going for number ones, which should be a good jump on point, but they are so overwritten. These fucking robots talk so fucking much.
I know.
But this one is present day, and then 4 million years ago. Apparently, Optimus Prime is 4 million years old.
Yeah, but you can't just jump onto his 4 millionth year and expect to understand what's going on.
I've got to go back 4 million issues of Transformers to make sense of this comic. The art was awesome in this book. I haven't seen Transformers and the coloring as well was kind of like Bende Dot kind of, I guess they're kind of throwing back to how comics used to be 4 million years ago. But I really, really enjoyed this. It was quite pop arty and sketchy. The art in this one was by Kay Zama, written by John Barber. So I will not be continuing with Optimus Prime, nor will I be continuing with Lost Light, which is the aforementioned extremely hard to follow description, but this is way more kind of new reader friendly. It definitely held your hand and you had someone narrating to you and one of the other characters and telling you where they were at this point and letting you know their motivations. And this one only jumps forward 500 years, 9 months, 14 days, and 6 hours later.
Oh, that's really
significantly
easy.
Less than 4 million years. Neither of these comics made me go, oh man, I love the Transformers comics.
Yeah.
But they have massive fans. These are all big sellers at
Kings.
People
just love Transformers. It's just one of those things that like I know I fundamentally will never understand because I just don't connect with it.
I want to, though.
I know. Like, we all want to.
I want,
they're robots with feelings and they're not even like like, that's my favorite thing. And this just, I have no time.
But your favorite thing is robot with feelings amidst other humans.
Yeah,
whereas
that's true.
In these comics, it's just everyone is a fucking Transformer. There's one person in the Optimus Prime one. I think I like the interaction between humans and Transformers, yeah. I guess. But I've done the call out before. If you can tell us a Transformers book that I might like, one that you love, that is a great entry point to this universe, these beloved comics, please share with us and I'll endeavor to read them.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, Transformers books. Unfortunately, not one that's latched onto me yet.
Matt, speaking of unreadable jumping on points, that actively sells itself as whenever you see this logo, you'll know it's the perfect jumping on point.
And it's a massive square that says launch.
Yeah. And so I read, because I'm always trying to understand the appeal of Xenoscope books, I read the first issue of Cinderella, Serial Killer Princess.
Featuring a very scantily clad blonde girl in kind of, I mean...
It's like if you went to any trashy Halloween shop and was like, I want a sexy Cinderella costume. Yep. This is what it would be. And this is subtitled Voodoo Slumber Party. So you know it's going to be really good and really culturally sensitive to people who practice voodoo. What are these comics? I don't understand. So in this universe, Cinderella is like a valley girl / serial killer. So everything she says is like, you know, whatever. And then
it was a great impersonation.
Thank you. And she just goes through.
I felt like I was there.
And kills everyone in the Xenoscope universe, which turns out to be surprisingly diverse. There were two characters with physical disabilities, an interracial lesbian couple, and they all were decapitated by this bizarre Cinderella character. I don't understand why this is popular. I don't understand who likes this. I don't understand who it's written for. I don't understand what's going on in the brains. Two people wrote this. I don't understand what's going on in their brains. It was fairly just boring more than anything else, probably.
And to be maybe sexy fairy tale people cut people, but the art's not even that appealing on a pervy level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally. Absolutely. It's not sexy in any way. And the whole point is that she wants to go and kill this universe's Robin Hood, who is a sexy lady, obviously. Just ludicrous. And I'm on board. I'm reading the whole series.
I can't wait. Are they all the number ones that we've read this week?
No, I also read the first issue of Richard Corbin's Shadows on the Grave. This is just a bunch, if you like Richard Corbin, horror stories, then this is for you. This is a bunch of maximum kind of 10-page stories done in black and white and Richard Corbin's distinct style.
Do you like... Are you a Richard Corbin fan?
I mean, not hugely. I'm not a huge horror comics person.
I love
I love his art style. I think it's so weird and interesting.
So I love some of his Hellboy stuff is some of my favorite in the run.
But I didn't find any of these stories scary. What I did find scary, though...
Great segue.
Was a one-shot from Amigo Comics called Tales from the Suicide Forest, written by El Torres with art by Fran Galan. And this is two Spanish or whatever. South American, Christ Almighty.
That's what the episode's called, by the way.
Oh, my God. It's an anthology comic about the suicide forest in Japan, where there's 1,000 suicides every year. So it's just little stories from there. It's really good and really scary and really confronting. And apparently there's a whole graphic novel of them with art by Gabriel Walter,
who
did The Vision. So I'm going to be checking that out for sure.
Did he do any of the art in this one?
No, he didn't. The first story is about some teenagers who sexually bully a girl into killing herself in the suicide forest, but then the girl comes back to haunt them.
Yes.
Great.
And
then another one about this dude who goes into the forest to perform some kind of voodoo on all of the people that he works with because they don't respect him and they haven't given him a promotion and all the women don't want to date him because he's a fat loser and how dare they. And then once he's sort of nailed these effigies of them to the trees, they themselves become like appear and are nailed to the trees, and then he can't leave the forest. Every time he tries to run away, he comes back to the clearing until he kills himself. And as he kills himself, he sees a vision of all the people talking about him and talking about what a great guy he is and how they're really excited to give him this actually way bigger promotion, and all the girls are talking about wanting to ask him out, and he just dies sad. It's amazing.
Spooky stuff.
Heaps spooky.
Those are all the number ones that we reviewed this week, the end of First Things First. Find us talking about them on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/serious issues podcast. Mm-hmm. Or you can talk about all of this week's new number ones on our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/serious issues podcast. Come join the conversation, y'all. There's 300 of us.
Pretty fun.
Talk about comics all goddamn day. Now let's read the rest. Oh, sorry. Beloved segment. The orthodox way. We always flip a coin to see whether we should review the Marvel or DC books that came out this week. Siobhan, which is?
Tails is DC.
Okay. Heads it is.
Marvel.
It's always Marvel first, I feel like.
I don't know.
Here's my theory is that coins prefer Marvel. So what did I really love this week? I really loved The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, number 15, by Absolutely. Ryan North, Erica Henderson, and special guest artist Zach Gorman. This was a story all about Mew, who is...
Nancy's cat.
Yep, Nancy is the Squirrel Girl's housemate, and she has an adorable white cat called Mew. And this is a book in which Squirrel Girl faces off against Taskmaster, mm-hmm. and needs to enlist the entirety of the Marvel Universe to help her fight him. And in the end, it turns out that Mew thwarts him, the cat, just by being a cat. So this mm-hmm. is an entire issue from her point of view. At one point, she falls asleep, and there is a bunch of dream comics, and these are written and drawn, at least drawn by Zach Gorman.
Very cute. Very really, cute really, issue. Really cool. Funny.
Yeah, really great. I mean, like, I love issues of Marvel comics told from an animal's perspective.
Mm.
Or even just comics told from an animal perspective. There was a really great Superman issue told from Krypto's. It was a Superboy issue. I can't remember. But it was about just after Superboy died and him missing Superboy. Really sweet. And then, of course, there was the classic Pizza Dog issue of Hawkeye. This is a great comic. And if one of the few things putting you off from reading an Unbeatable Squirrel Girl is how much text there is, this was the least text heavy Unbeatable Squirrel Girl since Ryan North started writing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I love Ryan North, so on if anything, I wanted more text. where else? I'm clutching at straws for Marvel books that I liked this week. Oh wait, Power Man and Iron Fist, number 11.
Yeah.
Featuring us learning more about Alex Wilder, who was once in the Runaways. He's back now. And he's got crazy evil powers. He gets referred to as Childish Gambino quite a few times in this issue. He's basically recruiting different villains to take down Tombstone. And Power Man and Iron Fist are going to try and stand in his way.
Pretty great. Really great, actually. Continually such a fun comic.
This one probably the most convoluted arc so far because it's just so many different characters.
And there's lots of jumping through time.
Yeah, but I'm still really enjoying it. Stanford Green on art is a joy.
Absolutely.
Such a different style to other superhero books. And whenever he draws a character that you know and love and they show up, you're like, oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
I love Disco Devil in this.
Yep.
And it's just good at all these wacky 70s characters that were in the original Heroes for Hire and Power Man and Iron Fist comics kind of show up and get new iterations of themselves, how they fit into a world like they're in today. It's just a really good book.
Yeah, real fun. Heaps good.
David Walker, great writer.
Absolutely. So did you read Mosaic?
No.
Did you read Mosaic? Issue three. I really like this comic.
Really? Because
Why didn't you like it?
I just found it dull and kind of hard to follow.
I sort of find it interesting so far. I sort of like the characters. Like, I like that he's a basketball star and who's dating, like, he's pretty much like Swaggy P from the Lakers, who's dating Iggy Azalea. And in this he sort of finds out that his dad paid her to be his girlfriend to further both of their careers. and she's actually a secret lesbian with her bodyguard / assistant, which he finds out, which lead character Morris, who can jump into other people's bodies, like Jericho from the Teen Titans, finds out when he jumps into her head. Ooh, pretty heavy. But I enjoy this. It's sort of him. It finishes with him jumping into Spider-Man's body.
Okay, cool.
Which is pretty compelling.
Because my problem was that it didn't really seem to go anywhere.
Yeah, I feel like it's starting to go somewhere. And Carrie Randolph? I don't know quite how to pronounce that. Carrie Randolph and Tony Silas on art is really good fun.
Yeah. Again, it looks like a really great animated series.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Yeah. I might go back and read a few of these later on.
But, yeah, I find it enjoyable.
A lot of books this week, guys.
Yeah, jeepers.
Okay, we're moving into... Oh, no, I enjoyed this issue. Uncanny Avengers number
17. Yeah, that was fun, huh?
By Jerry Duggan with art by Pepe Larraz. In this, the Hulk has been resurrected by the Hand, and it's up to the Uncanny Avengers, who now feature Elektra and, Human Torch. Everyone, they've got to take the Hulk down. I found it really, really fun.
Yeah, that was heaps fun.
Obviously they take him down. And is this series continuing? It is continuing, yeah. It looks like Red Skull has infiltrated Quicksilver's mind.
Yes.
So that's fun.
Yeah.
It looks like it's probably going to tie into Captain America, the Hydra story, pretty soon.
Cool. Yeah, I'm enjoying that.
Is it the next big event after IVX? Is the Hydra War and Nick Spencer's doing?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
We're finally going to see Captain America's Hydra stuff come to a head. That's kind of appealing.
That's kind of fun.
I guess.
Yeah.
Sure. I love comics. Poe Dameron, number 9. It just threatens me to drop it every time. It gives me just enough to keep reading it. It's telling the story of this what once was a member of the Empire, Terek, who's mm-hmm. been kind of his adversary throughout the 9 issues that we've seen so far. My problem with this book is that all the Poe Dameron stuff is really dull to me, and all the rest of it is actually kind of appealing.
Yeah, well, I think it's really hard to convey the charm of Oscar Isaac in comic book form, and Phil Noto does like an extremely good likeness and extremely good
job. I've got no problems with the art.
But yeah, like he's a bit kind of just sassy and not interesting.
Yeah, there's more charm in just his face on the various covers.
Man, like, C-3PO comes across as mad charming in comparison, which is crazy.
Yeah, so I kind of speed read this one now.
Yeah, I sort of enjoy it. Like it's a bit kind of
it's slow, but
kind of enjoy it.
We love average comics here at Serious Issues.
Red.
Speaking of which...
Oh, gosh.
Are we in the didn't like or like? Have you got some ones that you liked?
Because I'm going to unload on this liked is a strong word. I read the second issue of Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows by Jerry Conway with art by Ryan Stegman. Ryan Stegman's art is definitely the best thing about this. In this universe, Mary Jane, like, is like, she runs a clothing shop, is like a fashion blogger and a mum and all this kind of nonsense, which are just like...
Wait, both?
I hate the, for some reason any reference to blogging makes me roll my eyes really hard.
Yeah, for you it's blogging, for me it's hacking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nah, I love a good fake hack. That's my favorite. So this is kind of more about Mary Jane, who now has some spider powers, and their child, whatever her name is, Annie May or whatever, keeps getting into trouble in like the most irritating way ever. It is a fairly confusing book, but I kind of enjoyed it. It's got a funny Mole Man ending. Ryan Stegman's art is great. Ryan Stegman should draw Spider-Man forever. I also read the issue 13 of the Totally Awesome Hulk, which has an assist from Jeremy Lin. So this is about Amadeus Cho playing basketball with Jeremy Lin in a charity game.
An Asian American basketball superstar?
Yes. This was not very good.
Damn it. Was it still written by Greg Pack? Or?
Yeah, it's still written by Greg Pack, and the art's like, still nice.
Who was the dude from Whose Line Is It Anyway who straight out wrote himself into the Spider-Man book recently?
I can't remember his name.
But I thought this was going to be like Jeremy Lin wrote himself
That would have been sick. I would have read. That would probably would have been heaps better.
You just said I would have read that, and you did read this anyway.
So yeah, no, I read it anyway. I'm a sucker, whatever.
All right, this book. Brian Michael Bendis, Michael Gaidos, and Matt Hollingsworth on Jessica Jones, number 3, returning to the character that they created years ago for Marvel Max. I fucking hate this book so much.
I thought this was like probably the best issue of the 3 that I've read so far.
But it is just...
But it's not good.
Nothing fucking happens in
it. Like, it is the most... Like, it's so funny because it's the most classic criticism of Bendis ever that everyone just sits there. And this is literally an issue where Jessica Jones is tied to a chair and just talks to someone for the whole time.
She gets punched a bit.
She gets punched in the face
a bit. And says some rude things to people. Like, again, sassy. Jessica Jones' sassiness really, really irks me.
Yeah. It's really grating.
Because she's a mum now. Everyone knows you have a baby.
You can't be sassy and a mom.
That's right.
Everyone knows
sassy,
when you're a mom.
A fashion blogger and a mom.
Everyone knows when you're a mom, your life ends. All right.
But sassiness is, you know, comes with being a teenager and not having responsibilities, right?
Oh, I don't know. I'm okay with her still, like, having a, like, narky sense of humor, but just, like, this is not compelling in any way. And it just ends, like, every issue ends with her just, like, jumping away from Luke Cage, and this ends exactly the same way.
I don't want to be written about on Mamma Mia, so I will say mums can be sassy too, everybody.
I think the main problem is that she's just, like, an unrepentant dick. You know, like, why would Jessica Jones, who has been in this, like, loving, committed relationship with Luke Cage for years, now not, like, refuse to talk to him even? Like,
oh, so mums can't irritating. Be unrepentant dicks now? Gosh,
I mean, they are.
Way to set everyone back with.
They definitely are. But just not Jessica. Not Jessica Jones.
All mums are unrepentant.
All mums are dicks.
All mums are dicks.
Fight me, mums.
Yeah,
I love you, mum.
I don't know where this comic's going.
I don't want to know. I don't care.
I'm reading it because I'm like, he's not going to fuck this relationship up, is he? Is he really going to do it? Is this motherfucker going to do it? This motherfucker's doing it. And, like, apparently Power Man and Iron Fist coming up soon, it ties into this.
No.
So it is going to be like, you know, like they've been separated and their daughter's missing.
That sucks. If
maybe Menace is playing the long con. I'm like, that's why I'm reading it. Like, fingers crossed for when he looks at, like has Jessica Jones, like, wink at the camera, like, just kidding.
Oh,
this
yeah.
This is like, all a ruse to thwart you. And I don't know.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
We didn't even talk about the plot, but
there's no plot. What's the plot? Who cares?
There's no plot, but there is the dot or the spot. What's his name? The spot?
Yeah.
The guy who can make spots and then jump, teleport through the spots.
Yay, comics.
I don't like this book. But also, like, why the fuck is he in this book? Because it's, like, it's meant to be, like, gritty, realistic kind of Jessica Jones stuff, but then...
I don't know. I don't understand. There's so much about this that I don't understand.
And then, like, the big reveal at the end of this book is that she's been held hostage across the road from her apartment, and then she flies away.
She jumps away from Luke Cage.
Yeah, it's like... There's no comic book satisfaction that comes out of a Bendis book now. It's just like, it's not even a real... If the cliffhangers were like, you know, if it was a bad book, but then it was just like a ridiculous reveal at the end.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, I get this. It's like, you know, popcorn fun. But it's just not satisfying on any level for me.
Totally.
I can't wait for issue 4.
Absolutely.
All right, over to DC now. Let's burn through these. Should we start with the good?
Yeah.
Wonder Woman.
Yay!
God damn it, this was a good issue. We've been raving about Greg Rucka's Wonder Woman run, in which the odd issues are drawn by Liam Sharp, and the even issues, or the odd issues are set during present day, and the even issues are drawn by Nicholas Scott, and are set, it's like Wonder Woman's first year of being Wonder Woman, of her first coming to Earth, and sorry, to the Western world, world. Yeah.
Yes.
Is Themyscira technically on Earth?
I mean, I feel like we're about to find out.
That's very true.
It could be on a separate plane, but
Why, like, you know, when you first read those first few issues, it was you were unsure if these two separate stories were going to tie in together. They have come together so well.
So cleverly.
I don't know how much longer that's going to continue for. I know Nicola Scott isn't going to draw this beyond maybe two or three more issues, I think, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. She only signed on to do this first story arc.
So whether or not that means the year one arc is going to continue alongside the current day, or they're just going to go all current day after this story ends, I don't know. But I'm loving both the present day and the year one stuff, especially the year one stuff.
Absolutely. There's so much great character stuff in here. Like, I've never cared about Cheetah as a character before, but AKA I love
Dr. Minerva.
Yep. I love Barbara Ann. I love the sort of cute potential romance blossoming between her and Etta Candy.
Yep.
That is adorable. I loved that, you know, they sort of reference and confirm the fact that Diana was in a sort of committed lesbian relationship on Themyscira and that she had to leave that to come to Man's World.
Yeah.
And she confirms that I did not come here for you, Steve. Like, I came here because it was my duty.
Yep.
Very, like, really good.
Yeah. And in the end, we see the big bad is Ares, the god of war.
Yeah. Classic villain, classic Wonder Woman villain. Makes sense for the first story arc.
And a very incredibly drawn version of him.
Yeah. And it cannot, I know we say it every month, but it just can't be stated enough how incredible Nicola's work is on this book. Like, it's so beautiful.
I'll spoil it for everybody. She won Artist of the Year at our awards the other day, by a lot of votes too. So
absolutely.
Really cool. I mean, obviously it helps that we are a Sydney-based podcast, so
yeah,
a lot of people will probably side with the Sydney cider. And that's exactly where Nicola Scott lives.
She earns it with every single issue. And the colors by Romolo Fayado Jr., I believe, is like, they're so beautiful. This is such a beautiful book.
I love the reveal that, you know, the terrorists that they've been on the chase, they've been chasing have been the Seer group.
Yeah.
And they work out that when you rearrange the letters in Seer, it makes Ares.
That's yeah.
Really great. Really, really great clever stuff.
And I loved that sort of double page spread of, like, Diana kind of testing out her abilities with Steve, and he's like happily shooting at her and she's happily knocking the bullets away with her bracelets.
That's the point. I didn't even pick up that was a funny thing. I was just like, this is the best book.
So
I should point out that all DC books this week felt double their size.
Oh, I know.
Because there is a, like, 12-page insert about...
I didn't actually open it at all.
Oh, my God. It.
It
is so weird. It's the Suicide Squad versus Justice League. Turns out that the main bad guy in this is Maxwell Lord.
Woo!
Which is pretty good. And Lobo is going to be... In the group that Maxwell Lord puts together to take out Suicide Squad and Justice League.
I'm kind of down to read that now. Such a sucker.
It looks like it's going to be Justice League versus Suicide Squad for like one issue, and then they're going to team up to take on the bigger bad.
Right. Maxwell Lord's no fun if he's like... The reason Maxwell Lord was interesting was because you didn't see him coming as a villain for ages.
Yeah, it's true. If he's just a bad guy from the start, it's kind of like...
It's just like, oh, here's another like Lex Luthor.
More on that next week when the Suicide Squad versus Justice League book starts. Speaking of Suicide Squad, I'm just going to talk about the wrap up of this arc that I Stockholm syndromed myself into liking. This is written by Rob Williams with art by Jim Lee, and they managed to get Jim Lee to commit to a fortnightly book by having the main part of the story be told 12 pages at a time in each issue, which meant it was kind of a stretch to kind of make the story be impactful for those first few issues, but then it kind of became quite fun. And this arc, you know, for all of my hatred of it as it started, I will take some of it back. I think this was actually like just straight up kind of throwback dumb action comics. This was actually quite enjoyable.
Yeah, nice. And I'm glad to hear it.
I'm glad that I've just, you know, I'm big enough of a man to admit that I was wrong. This was kind of okay. it also sets up kind of what the Justice League versus Suicide Squad is going to be like. It looks like Killer Frost is going to play a big part in it too. I like Killer Frost.
Oh yeah, no, she's amazing.
You don't like her?
I don't really know anything about
her. She removes the heat from her victims and then uses it in ice blasts against
them. Cool.
Pretty fun. So she's like, it has her like scanning all the different cells and kind of trying to look like scanning for heat. And then she's like, oh, this room is the coldest one of all. And it's the one with Amanda Waller in it.
Ah, sick.
Pretty cool.
God, I love Amanda Waller.
Yeah, that was really good. I don't know. There are dumb books that just appeal to me sometimes.
Yeah, totally. Comics.
Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, issue 10 by Robert Venditti and fill-in art by Ed Bennis. First of all, I really, really loved Ed Benes's take on these characters, like the kind of more pencil-y style of his artwork.
Interesting. It's just like, so funny to me because, like, Kyle Rayner is like, he shouldn't be the beefcake Green Lantern, should he? But his traps are huge in this. He's like the artist, guys.
Even the Guardians are kind of beefed up.
Sexy little midgets.
Yeah, but this is we have most of the Green Lanterns have been imprisoned by
Brainiac.
They're put in a bottle as he does, and the entire time Brainiac's referring to getting his stolen relics ready for the Grand Collector, and we find out at the end that it is a different colored lantern, an orange one at that.
Orange lantern.
Yeah, that's right. Lafleaze, yeah, and he's a cult favorite.
Yeah, I like Lafleaze as much as the next person.
No, you don't.
No, I don't. I barely like Lafleaze. But for some reason, I don't like the idea. Like, Brainiac is a big, scary villain. He's a Superman villain. Like, I feel like he shouldn't be deferring to Lafleaze.
I feel like maybe he was paying him or something like that. Like,
maybe.
I don't know. Who knows?
I find it weird.
Also, Brainiac's, if you look at him, he's all orange. So maybe Lafleaze has done
maybe he's
to
like
him.
Infected him or something. Yeah, but like, I mean, I think I didn't like the reveal so much just because I feel really over like all the different colored lanterns. Like, I'd like them to be able to move away from that for a minute. And I know that the yellow lanterns are in this, but like, that's classic.
Yeah, so I was over the yellow lanterns and over the red lanterns, but put them together, orange.
Orange, that's a winner.
There is just one of them. At least it's just one guy.
Yeah, that's true.
Instead of like, you know, and like, I hate the like red lantern trope of like, oh, now there's like a angry cat spitting blood everywhere. Whoa, isn't that spooky? Yeah.
But like, there were some good moments in this. I love Kyle being back and the sort of moments of Hal in like the green space where Green Lanterns go to die was kind of fun. That was kind of cool. Him getting to talk to Abin Sur and like Tomar Ray and
totally.
Stuff. That was nice.
Yeah, definitely. What next, Siobhan? The Flash, number 12?
Yeah. Are you still reading The Flash?
I said I was going to get it off and then I didn't. Because I saw that issue 14 of this is going to be bringing the Rogues back.
Yes.
And Captain Cold is one of my favorite villains. So,
he is a good villain.
I'm going to keep reading.
I liked this. I thought this was a good wrap-up to this Shade story arc. It's got some like classic sort of coming-of-age lessons for the new Wally West.
And a cute little romantic moment too. Which
absolutely. Bringing back.
I was like, do I want to read this? And I flicked past that page and saw the, you know, this like dumb asking out on a date as a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's dumb. That's silly. But then I ended up actually reading the book and I was like, oh, that was really nice.
I love Iris and Barry.
There's also a brilliant moment where Wally West and Barry Allen fist bump.
Yes. To create save a massive the universe. Light.
But
Great.
The splash page after it is so good and reminded me actually of The New Frontier. In fact, there are lots of moments in this issue that reminded me of The New Frontier by Darwin Cook.
That's a huge compliment.
That was in the holiday special. Captain Cold puts 8 bombs all around the city.
Yeah. Like, that was very reminiscent. And I like the sort of thing of Wally trying to guess Barry's name.
Yes.
So he's just always like Lance. Yeah.
Very great.
Yeah.
Real good. Where's Jay Garrick, though?
I don't know, actually. Where is Jay Garrick?
Hurry up. Bring all the old guys back.
Are they still all in, like, Earth 2 or something?
I don't know.
I don't really read that.
They'll fix it. I'm sure that was meant to be a big part of Rebirth, so I'm sure they'll come through. Did you read Detective this week?
I did read Detective this week.
I think this arc is actually going somewhere good. The Victim Syndicate, people that have been affected by Batman in a bad way coming out to, you know, take down Batman.
Yeah, this has gotten better than I expected.
Are you on the same wavelength as me? Who do you think the main member of the Victim Syndicate is? It's Stephanie Brown's dad, right?
Who's Stephanie Brown? Oh, like the calculator or whatever?
You know, isn't he like, he's just some 2-bit bad guy that was out to kill her?
I wasn't her dad the calculator? Am I a mental? Maybe.
Maybe.
Well, I feel justified in the fact that Stephanie Brown is a fucking turncoat.
Yeah.
And she ends by being like, I have to stop things. I thought the moment between Clayface and his sister was really lovely.
Yeah, definitely.
Mudface.
Was it a sister? Isn't it just his biggest fan?
I don't know. I'm clearly reading my own comic here.
And also, does Stephanie Brown, I don't think she's going to be bad, does she? She's trying to take the syndicate down in her own way, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe, I don't know. But yeah, enjoyable. Super enjoyable. And I still really love
Eddie Barrows,
who does the amazing, like,
Barrows, yes.
The big, big sort of painted panel close up on each character's face. I just find that nice. It seems really old school. It seems really old school DC, which I really enjoy.
And I love that we know that Tim Drake isn't dead.
Yeah.
And so even though you have the characters having these meaningful moments about him being dead, but having the reader knowing that he's not dead actually makes it more powerful.
Yeah, totally.
Because you're really excited for him to come. Because the true mystery, there's no mystery. When a character dies, obviously they're going to come back.
Yeah.
But knowing that they're not actually dead and just somewhere in space waiting to come back, it's actually like a way more interesting way of doing it to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This is a good book, Detective. Yeah, totally. I'm glad we said it was one of the best books of the year, because I think for DC it definitely was.
Absolutely.
Action Comics.
I've stopped reading Action Comics.
This is a very silly issue that did not go anywhere I wanted it to. You know those guys that were like trying to take out Lex Luthor from the future? Whatever. Well, they're the God Slayers or something. Here we got like half the book is a backstory involving them and no character from Superman within it.
Great. That's what we all want from a Superman comic, right? Whatever.
Like, I'm still going to read this book because even I was able to just skim through that part and I don't think I lost anything from the story. I like reading Superman books.
Yeah, absolutely.
So sue me. Batgirl Birds of Prey, number 5.
New Oracle revealed.
As a fanboy.
Yeah.
what did you think of that reveal?
I mean, it's not what I expected, but I kind of liked that it was like a new character and I thought he was quite funny. Like, I thought it was quite a funny, like, take on it. Like,
yeah,
he's just this dude who's trying to help, but he's doing it in like a kind of mental way. And there were just some really funny panels of him looking like really wide-eyed and excited to be there. And I like this Birds of Prey team. I really like this version of Huntress. I find the banter between her and Black Canary like really good and funny, and I like the relationships that are building, and I like the art a lot by is it Sarah Benson?
Yeah.
Shauna Benson, sorry.
Whoops.
Nope. Still wrong.
What is it?
Rog Antonio.
What?
Rog Antonio? ROGE.
Okay.
Anyway, I like it.
I disagree with you. Yep, we'll just be wrong. I don't care.
Yeah,
let's
nice.
Be wrong. I think I would enjoy this more if one of these characters started being capable.
I find them all. Are they not all capable?
They kind of fuck up a lot.
Yeah.
They don't really work together as a team yet. I get that, you know, there is
a journey. It's the first arc.
I know, but like, I don't know. I kind of just want them. I've seen them work as a team in the past.
But now they have an oracle to give them structure. You know what I mean?
How cool would it be if Batgirl started like a hacker fraction called Oracle, and it was all these different people acting as Oracle.
Like Anonymous.
That would be cool.
That would be cool.
Anonymous is great and only does great things.
And they're really cool.
We're joking.
So I read heaps more.
I read some more.
Gee whiz. Do you read New Superman?
Yeah, I'm going to drop this.
Yeah, you said. I kind of liked this issue. I thought this was quite good. Like, I mean, it's some pretty heavy stuff, like Kenan's dad dies and we start to understand the motivation.
Killing parents comics.
Yeah, but it's classic.
Also,
you know what I mean?
Really
and it's like introduced. It's an introduction to the character.
Also, not only did he not really die, but his mom also isn't really dead. Right?
But is that his mom? I thought that the vibe was that this lady had like killed his mom and then tried to like and was because she loved thingy.
Well, I'll never know because I'm not going to read another issue.
Well, I'll tell you.
Thank you so much.
And I like chubby Batman.
I do too. There are moments in this book that I really like, but I just find like, I mean, look at that cover. There's 20 characters.
Yeah, but I like all those characters.
I mean, yeah, but granted, 10 of them are in the great 10.
Yeah.
So that's half the character. But like, I don't know, it's very, very overwritten in parts and super dialogue heavy.
It is pretty dialogue heavy, but I like the nods it gives to like I get kind of, like, sometimes it's annoying that every team's first adventure seems to be Starro-based.
Yep.
But I sort of liked that this was, like, the first sort of, first Justice League of China kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
And they go up against the
Great Ten.
The Great Ten. Yeah, absolutely. Heaps fun. Really enjoyed it. So I also read Deathstroke, issue 8. The Professional Conclusion Part 2. I feel like this is my Suicide Squad. Like, this is the comic that I continue to read and find compelling without really understanding why I like
this
it.
This one is way more critically revered than,
is it?
Than Suicide Squad.
I don't
believe it or not.
I don't read anyone else's reviews. I literally just have my own opinions.
This actually popped up on a lot of people's best of lists.
Yeah, interesting. Because it is kind of like, I think it'll read, I think I want to actually go back and read it in trade,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't do very often these days, because it is kind of compelling, but I feel like it was slightly confusing in single issue, or maybe it's just because I read a million comics and so I couldn't remember what was going on. But so this is Deathstroke fighting Superman, and he has like this cool suit that can absorb energy, so he manages to not be killed by Superman somehow. And it has.
Why does he just always wear that suit?
Well, I think he does now.
Oh, right.
I think it's his new outfit. But it has some funny Jericho stuff in like a way worse costume than his sweet mutton chops and like harp player gear from the George Perez and Marvel film run. Now he's like a,
He kind of looks like the Mike Allred character Madman.
Yeah, he does. He does. With tufty hair coming out the top. Yep. But yeah, pretty fun. Enjoyable, weird Deathstroke stuff. Less creepy stuff in this one
good for you, Christopher Priest.
Yeah, good job. I also read Gotham Academy second semester issue 4. Like these issues are fun because they are primarily standalone. Like this is about a evil carnival coming to the school and all the kids sneak out at night to go to it. And then it turns out it was like the headmaster used to be in the evil carnival 100 years ago and is all
this
kind of stuff.
Is there any bat stuff in this?
No.
So that's the thing. I've got excited about this like teen comic existing in Gotham because I was like, oh, cool, all the Gotham stuff is going to be a part of it, but it doesn't.
It is much more like Harry Potter influence than it is Batman. I mean, like sometimes the characters are sort of bat characters. Like
that's all I need. Like
yeah. Like I mean, all the teachers and stuff are like, you know, bookworms, the librarian, and stuff like that. Okay. So it brings in some really obscure characters. And I still enjoy it. I think it's good. Good teen stuff. On a completely different note, I also read The Clean Room, issue 14 by Gail Simone. It's really hard to talk about this because it's now, like, by issue 14, this is extremely complicated as a book.
Are we nearing the end of this run too?
I don't actually know. I sort of thought it was ending before, but it just keeps going. And so I kind of hope it's just ongoing because it's super, like, super compelling, and like the depths of Gail Simone's imagination are unbelievable. Like, she used to be a hairdresser, and in like, was she thinking about sort of bridges made of humans stretching across the bay of wherever? Like, it's just, it's like, it's really gross, horrible stuff a lot of the time, but it's pretty fun.
The bay of wherever is also another good potential name for this episode.
I'm just full of,
I'm about to put it to a vote,
full of great knowledge today.
That came out through Vertigo, and I read a Vertigo book this week too. The third issue of The Lost Boys by Tim Seeley, with awesome art. Whenever there's a book based on likenesses in a movie, and the artist just nails that, like, you know, without being photo referential, just like you know who that character is meant to be, and it's just good. Artist by Scott Godlewski. As I continue with this, the second issue of The Lost Boys, which I only read this morning because I knew that the third issue came out, I hadn't read it yet, was perfect, like pitch perfect. Like, even though I haven't watched the movie in 15 years, I didn't feel lost at any point. This issue was all over the place, and I'm like, oh man, if my enjoyment of this series hinges on me rewatching The Lost Boys, which isn't actually a bad thing.
No, I watched it for the first time recently.
Oh, amazing!
His copy to me, and I was like, how have I never watched this before? Well, this is ludicrous.
Guess who's been brought back as a character, like a main character, like as a hunter in this book?
Amazing.
The Sax Man.
Oh, yes, he.
The guy who plays saxophone, the shirtless guy in the band who plays the saxophone. Yeah, he's like just a character in this book now.
Amazing. Great. So good. Yeah. That's a great concept.
So I like this, and I know it is very true to the film, but true to the point where I need to rewatch it again so I know heck anybody is.
Amazing.
So those are the DC and Marvel books we read this week. We've got a few more books from other publishers. Should we go through all the Image stuff first?
Yeah, why not?
Sherborne did not read Reborn.
No.
Do you see what I did there? Issue 3 by Mark Millar and Greg Capullo. Man, I was like, at the end of it, last issue, you were like, I'm not going to read this anymore. I'm like, no, I'm like, see where it's going to go. And this is a perfect example of a bad comic that I really enjoy reading.
Oh, yeah.
Because even though I thought this comic was just stupid, and I quite liked issue 1 and less so issue 2, but I thought it was up to a great start. I want to really enjoy all of Mark Millar's comics because 2 years ago, I liked everything he did. I think maybe I just love Starlight. And that
I think he just knows how to write like one good thing every couple of years.
Jupiter's
Legacy.
Jupiter's Thinger is great.
But that's because of Frank Whiteley, and we all know it.
Nah, there's an okay story in there. But I obviously, like, him doing stuff with Greg Capullo is pretty appealing. And this book just goes off the rails. Maybe that will be even more appealing to you because it allows Capullo to draw some very crazy stuff. There's like a weird underworld, and the cat that she neutered is now like her main threat. And like this is the story that began with like everyone, you know, when you die, you get transported to a fantasy land, and the extent of this fantasy land is just gets dumber and dumber with this issue. And now it just feels like Mark Millar trying to write like a Rick Remender-esque, like, anything goes kind of fantasy, but
yeah.
Rushing. Like, the beauty of his books is that, like, you know, Black Science is almost 30 issues deep, and he's kind of shown the extent of how insane that this world and universe can get across all of those issues, whereas this is a 6-issue limited series, and Martin Millar and Capullo are just doing it really quickly, and things take insane turns, and they don't really feel, like, earned or good.
Yeah. Also, like, I feel like there are some real issues, like, with this universe concept. Like, it would have to be the most overpopulated world on Earth.
No, you can die in this.
Right, okay, that was my next question. What happens when you die in this one?
Lots of people do die.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah, so there are stakes. Yeah, then they're just dead, I guess. I don't know. Or maybe you get reborn again somewhere else.
And then an even worse universe.
There is the dumbest moment where they're escaping from the fight, and then someone, a big guy in a cloak, and you can just see his eyes. He opens his cloak and is like, quick, over here. I'm a friend and can hide you. So they go, okay, and they jump in his cloak, and then he transports them to a prison. And now they're in prison. They're like, oh, damn, I can't believe we fell for it. So dumb. Why the fuck did that happen? We've been tricked. I just realized where we are.
That's nice.
Yeah, anyway.
Amazing.
Not a good... But I'm still going to read issue 4, 5, and 6.
I forgot to read Moonshine.
Moonshine number 3. Brian Azzarello, Eduardo Risso. Again, the strongest thing about this is Risso's art. He's so goddamn good. And the colors in this... We haven't really shouted out the color before. So Eduardo Risso does colors with assistance from Christian Rossi. They're really beautiful.
That is really lovely.
They're so simple. Blocky colors, but yeah. they suit the art so well.
Absolutely. You know,
One thing I've never seen is Eduardo Risso's art in black and white. What's he done in black and white? Oh, in Batman
they've
black
reprinted,
and white.
Yeah, they reprinted. And they also reprinted some of his other Batman stuff in black and white, which I feel like I have.
Okay, cool. I would like to see more of it in black and white because I love his use of shadows so much.
Absolutely.
This is a story about the mobster trying to get the moonshine to New York, and the moonshine makers are also maybe werewolves.
Werewolves!
But now I'm starting to think that maybe the main character is a werewolf. Because he keeps waking up surrounded by dead bodies. So maybe it's him.
Oh, that's even cooler.
This book is... I'm not 100% hooked by this book, but then I remembered that I don't like the first 5 issues of 100 Bullets, and I consider 100 Bullets to be one of my favorite runs of all time. So, yeah.
Do we know, is this a limited, or are we assuming it's going to go on forever?
No idea.
Interesting.
So, yeah. You should be reading this anyway. This is two greats writing something with the potential to be great.
Absolutely.
Although it also is one that... Actually, no, I think this one works really well as an issue by issue. This isn't one of those few books that is telling a big, long story that actually, you know, you don't have to wait for trade on.
Yeah, totally.
Are they all the Image books I read? No! I read a couple more. Hadrian's Wall, number 4, which is the space-based murder mystery in which a ex-husband is sent to a space station to investigate the murder of his ex-wife's now-dead husband.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn a lot more about this universe in that there are huge conflicts between the Earth and the space station, and Earth refusing to send supplies to the space station, and there being revolts in society because of it. And then as we learn more about the world as it was, you know, before what we're seeing now, we learn more about the main character and his shady past, how he broke up with his wife, and those events in the past kind of come back to sting him in this book. And then we learn a much bigger threat than the potential murderer on board the space station. This is a great book.
Yeah, this is so good, guys. And it keeps getting better with every issue. And the art by Rod Rees is so nice. I feel like it's not like anything else out at the moment.
Yeah, and every character looks the looks different. Like, he's always drawn and colored them in different ways.
There's genuine, like, good visual characterization going on, which is like shockingly rare for a visual medium.
And I love, like, the main character is going through withdrawals because someone flushed all his drugs, and he just looks terrible.
Yeah. He's having a rough day.
I haven't seen a more unhealthy looking person in a comic book in a long while.
Yeah, totally. Heaps fun.
Great book. Really, one of the Image's best, I think. Kyle Higgins and Alex Siegel on this one. They did Cowl. I should go back and read Cowl because I only ever read the first issue.
Oh, did you read Cal? Yeah, no, I didn't read it.
Right. Green Valley number 3 by Max Landis with art by Giuseppe Camuncoli.
Giuseppe Camuncoli is good.
He showed up in the holiday special this week, I think.
I don't know.
He did something. Yeah, this book is the one where they introduce the big twist. If you don't want to be spoiled on this kind of bad book, skip forward a few minutes. The twist is that the wizard that these knights have been summoned to take down is actually someone from like our future with a tablet device that he can kill people with.
And look up information on their history. Cool. And he's a jerk who pulls women around by their hair. I mean, this is
Siobhan had a great comment.
I don't know what that great comment was.
You said that you would love that if the bad guy is just Max Landis.
Because that's kind of who it reminded me of.
He's always killing people with tablets and pulling women by their hair.
I mean, metaphorically. I feel like I sound like a broken record, but I'm so bored of comics that don't have any female characters in them. Like, the only women in this are women who are being abused, or killed to get back at their men. Like, I find that so dull.
Yeah, the only woman in this book is a corpse.
Yeah, heaps boring.
Oh, then there's a few in the... Yeah,
and, there's
totally
a sad
sucks.
Death, apparently, but... The guy was kind of a jerk, so I don't understand why we're supposed to be sad about him.
Yeah, great. Another man died. What a shame. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think it is... It's the same way, there's a... In the music scene at the moment, there's a kind of movement that... why should we support yet another all-male band?
Yeah.
And I feel the same way about... I feel even more so. It's harder to... Maybe it's harder to find a female drummer or bassist in your all-boys music school.
But you can draw women heaps easy. So, and it's a fantasy book. You don't have to be actually, in the real Middle Ages, women wouldn't have been knights. Fuck it. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. Yeah, there also weren't weird Max Landis characters with tablets that could kill people.
Yeah. Lighten up.
What a twist.
Totally.
Mayday.
I find... Okay, so I like Alex DeCampi.
Yep.
Good, pulpy comics. This I find, really unreadable. I don't understand. I think that they're supposed to be single.
Issue two. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're supposed to be standalone, but I just have zero idea what's going on. They're supposed to be, FBI, CIA kind of stories, Cold War-esque stuff, and there's, there's a playlist, so, it'll come up in panel, this song plays kind of deal, and I think that's, a fun concept of, you could, play along with it or whatever. But I have no idea what's going on at all in any of it. So I feel disappointed by that.
It's annoying because DeCampi's stuff has actually been really easy to follow in the past.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I find that one.
Yeah.
Hard to read. Anyway.
Those are all the Image comics I read and you read, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
I loved issue 2 of Terry Moore's Motor Girl this week. In fact, maybe my favorite comic that I read this week.
Yeah, I think it's really up there for me too. This is by turns so... sweet and funny and really heart-wrenching.
Yeah, it deals with someone suffering from PTSD after coming back from... Do you reckon this is what this kind of...
Well, I don't know, because she's fully cracked in some sense, and it's sort of... It could have been triggered by her terrible war experiences, but it seems... I don't think people usually hallucinate little green men in their backyard.
And have a best friend who's an enormous gorilla.
Yeah, exactly.
That no one else can see. But she, at one point, getting ready, takes her shirt off and it's covered in scars.
Yes.
So something traumatic has happened.
Absolutely.
Both physically and mentally, I'm sure. But, on a small level, this book is about a girl who's, a war veteran who now works repairing cars at a scrapyard. A massive corporation is trying to buy that scrapyard, and she doesn't want them to sell it.
And this is a comic, just in stark contrast, with two really diverse female characters. The woman who owns the scrapyard is a little old lady with, who wears a sun visor and has her pants hiked up to her right under her boobs. and she takes no shit from the dudes who are trying to buy her property, even though they are... intimidating and much bigger than her.
We are so used to that scene going where, they just walk all over the old lady, and that doesn't happen in this.
Totally.
So that was really cool.
And this lead character, whose name I've totally forgotten, is...
Motor Girl.
I just love her.
First
I love
name
it.
Motor, last name Girl.
I love this comic. And, Terry Moore is just such a talented cartoonist,
Yeah, and I think, I love... that she is talking to this potentially imaginary friend and talking out her inner demons instead of us reading that narration.
Absolutely.
Like, obviously, not every comic should have a big, enormous, imaginary friend.
I mean, agree to disagree.
Yeah.
If they're a big gorilla, I'm down.
But I do think it's a really great way of doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this.
And it lends itself to, like, you can have these, like, whimsical moments of, you know, potential things that don't really make sense in the bigger scheme of the plot. But it just works really well. It's a great book.
Really,
and it
really
makes
great.
Me go, like, I'm an idiot for not reading
Rachel
Rising. I'm an idiot for not reading Echo. I'm an idiot for not reading Strangers of Paradise.
Yeah, it makes me want to go read everything that Terry Moore's ever done.
Yeah, and just drop the big bucks, buy all the pocket editions.
Yeah, totally.
Not the omnibuses.
No, don't be a dummy.
You can't read those on the toilet. No dice. Motro.
Motro.
Through Oni Press, written by Ulysses
Farinas.
Yep.
With Eric Freitas.
And Orion Hill on colors. This is such a cool and weird book that's almost, like, I think someone compared it to, it was like Mad Max meets Adventure Time.
That's a great comparison. Although it's better than that makes it sound.
Yes, definitely. It is like this kind of crazy, goofy world, but with, like, realistic violence and death is very real and
consequences are real. And the lead character, Motro, is this unbelievably sweet, kind kid who doesn't want to hurt anyone because he has crazy strength. And so he knows if he fought someone, they would be seriously injured. And then he gets forced into a battle with the sort of leader of the community's son. And instead of sort of prolonging the fight and making it really difficult, he just ends it in one really horribly violent punch.
This is like pop arty kind of cartooning. It's very, like, it looks like an anime. It looks from a visual point, it definitely looks like Adventure Time.
Yeah, totally.
But this moment is, like, actually, like, one of the, like, most brutal things I've seen in comics this year.
Absolutely.
And there is this kind of, like, it reminds me a lot of King City. Like,
yeah, totally.
Something that would appear in a Brandon Graham anthology or book.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really spectacular, over the top and weird, and you kind of don't know what the next page or next issue is going to do.
But it's leading into something really
epic.
Sort of epic. Yeah, totally. It feels very epic in scale because there's sort of seeing into the future and seeing himself as a king. And I really love this. That and Motor Girl were my favorites of the week.
Yeah, I read them one after the other.
Yeah, same.
And I was just like, oh, this is about as good as my week's going to get.
Yeah.
So this is where I ended. There are a couple books I didn't get around to reading this week.
I read heaps more, but I'll just run through them really quick. I read issue 3 of Roger Langridge and Giselle Lagasse's Betty Boop. If you don't already like this, I doubt I can say anything more to convince you, but Giselle Lagasse is such a talented cartoonist. They managed to bring across the musical element of the original stuff really, really well. There's ongoing jokes, ongoing gags that are really clever, and I think this is heaps of fun. I love Roger Langridge.
I wish I had an affinity for Betty Boop. It's the only thing stopping me from liking this.
Yeah, I have nothing that, especially, like, I have no history of enjoying Betty Boop. I always sort of thought that she was just annoying on t-shirts, but this has made me a fan for sure.
Yeah.
I also read issue 3 of Mark Waid, Tom Peyer, and Wilfredo Torres's Captain Kidd.
So we loved the first issue of this, and I tapped out of the second issue. I believe you said you were going to as well.
Yeah, I kind of wish I had.
Really?
This is just about, like,
because it just got really, really weird with these weird women from the future.
Yeah, like, there's now sort of, like, multiple future versions of this character, and one of them's sort of evil. It's very, like, Paper Girls.
And this, the premise of this in the first issue was that Captain Kidd is a sick 40-something-year-old man.
Yeah.
Who, whenever he says his magic word, he turns into a teenager. Who,
so taking
with
on that kind of
Shazam kind of
classic Captain Marvel thing. But then they spend half the issue being like, this is my history. So originally it turns out that the future lady is the person who gave him the Captain Kidd powers. And originally she came to give him them when he was like a 15-year-old kid. But what she actually did was she just implanted the concept of the character in his brain. And so he became like this fat loser obsessed with Captain Kidd and obsessed with writing comics about this character. And it just, like, it ruined his life and it crippled him. And then it's like just goes on about how sad his life was as a fat old man and stuff like that, and just how he has to get over that so that he can be a superhero. Boring.
Oh. Boring. Sorry.
I read issue 2 of Namesake.
Is that Steve Orlando book on Boom?
Yep. Illustrated by Jacob Rebelka.
about like a weird portal to another world that you get magic from.
Yeah, so this is about a character who is taking the ashes of both of his fathers to this world, which is where they wanted to be buried. And he is an outlaw there, and he is being hunted by all these kind of really Mad Max influenced
spiky cars
and stuff like that. And then he finds out that the guy who is hunting him, because like his dad that he liked never mentioned who his other dad was, never mentioned him by name. And it turns out that maybe the dude is actually the guy who is hunting him or something, right? Unless I read that incorrectly. This isn't amazing. It's okay. It's only 4 issues, so I kind of feel like maybe I'll just see it out. But
on that note, do you remember Sombra, which was another book that Boom put out? That I said I couldn't be, I wanted to wait till all 4 are out before, and I'll go back and reread them. I did. Don't worry about doing that. No offense to everyone involved, Justin Jordan, etc.
I really like the art.
The art was fantastic, but as a story, it wasn't worth finishing.
Okay. I also read issue 4 of The Devil Inside Me, the adaptation of Jim Thompson's classic novel by Devin Farace with art by Vic Malhotra. I think this is probably one that's going to be better to read and trade. I found it fairly confusing. There's a lot of murders in this that I'm sort of losing track of.
Every week. There's lots of murders.
I'm losing track of all of them. But the art's really good, and I think it'll be a fun one to read in a complete volume. If
great,
that makes sense. The last book. Oh my god, guys! One that I really, really enjoyed. Another issue 4 of Peter Milligan and Juan Jose Rip, Rip's Britannia out through Valiant with colors by Jordi Belair. Jordi Belair is the latest person to be run off Twitter, by the way, for being a woman. Awesome. Very depressing. But Britannia is the sort of murder mystery set in like Roman-occupied Britain. So this is the area of Britain that was like not Gauls. These are more the Britons that are still like Celtic, and they believe in there's all druids and there's all that kind of stuff. And this detectioner from Rome has come to see what's going on at the settlement.
Because it's been all these crazy demonic killings.
Turns out it was demons. Crazy, right? But because he has the power of Vestal Virgins, he managed to get through it. I really like this. It's very bloody. It's very, while it's sort of full of demons and stuff like that, it is genuinely influenced by real history. And there's always a really interesting essay in the end by a historian, which I find compelling. If you're an ancient history fan, I think this is probably a good one. And I really like the art. It's like not, it's sort of, this book has a very like British feel. It feels like something that could have been in like a 2000 AD if they ever did sort of history comics.
Right.
But yeah, I really enjoy this. Heaps good fun. And I hope it gets another story arc.
Oh, is this it?
Like, it was a 4-issue
story,
which is nice. It was nice to be done in 4 issues. But I hope it gets another.
That was over quick, too.
Yeah, totally.
Valiant. Doing it like the pros.
Yeah, heaps clever. Liked it.
Those are all our reviews for this week. Please come and join us talking about them. Argue with us and tell us what we may have missed out on over at facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast, or again on our group where you can chat with us live and direct 24/7. facebook.com/group/seriousissuespodcast. You can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/serious_issues. Mm-hmm. And Siobhan's on there at SiobhanCBG on Instagram too, and I'm at LevDog, LevDawg. Make sure you tune in next week or later on in the week for our Best of 2016 live show.
Yep.
And we'll be back next Monday, obviously, with a regular episode in which we review all the comics coming out this week, which is an even bigger week than this week.
I know.
Luckily there's nothing important happening this weekend that's going to stop me from reading comics.
Ignore your family and read 50 issues of comics.
Some comics that I'm looking forward to is the return of 4 Kids Walk Into a Bank.
Oh, yep.
Through Black Mask, written by Matthew Rosenberg, which has been away for the last like 6 months. So very excited to see the new issue of that, and highly recommend you just catching up on those from the beginning. It's one of the better comics to come out this year. We have a 3rd issue of Siobhan's favorite Marvel comic of recent days, Cage.
Yes, please.
The beginning of the 3rd part of Divinity.
Stalinverse,
issue number 1 by Matt Kent through Valiant. I meant to put that on our favorite miniseries or kind of independent books this year for our best of. I forgot. Matt Kent's done some great stuff this year. And Valiant put out some great stuff too. Actually, on the Matt Kent note,
yep.
His book Aether has its second issue coming out through Dark Horse this week as well.
Excited about that.
Marvel are starting two new books based off of Guardians of the Galaxy members. We've got Gamora, number one, and which is written by the woman who originally wrote the Guardians of the Galaxy script.
Oh, cool.
Rhea Perlman, I think is her name. And then we've also got issue one of Star-Lord by Chip Zdarsky and Chris Anker. Chris Anker.
Make me like Star-Lord. Do it. So that's what I want from this.
Yeah. So I was going through all these different things that different characters within Guardians, and Siobhan's like, I hate them.
I really don't like the Guardians that much, to be honest.
You've got to read the Dan Abnett and Andy
Lanning
stuff.
I've read some of it. You've got to read all of it. It's all right. I'm really excited. We've got 6th issue of Black Hammer coming out this week.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be really good. Also, Cave Carson has a Cybernetic Eye issue 3. That will be heaps good fun.
But
too.
Most exciting, on the note of holiday specials, we have the Pile Man and Iron Fist Sweet Christmas special.
Nice.
It's just great when they, you know, I can't believe this hasn't existed before.
Obviously,
that's Cage's catchphrase, is one of his catchphrases. Sweet Christmas, and to put it in a special, it's just very clever. Well done, everyone who came up with that.
Whoever thought of that was like, oh man, I got something amazing for you guys.
Everyone sit down before I tell you this. We've also got another incredible holiday special, The Claws and Witch of Winter one-shot.
Yes, please.
By Grant Morrison and Dan Mora, one of our favorite books of the year, Claws, having a little bit of re-entering that world for what will be a nice, I'm sure, like beautifully put together special. And also there's a return to one of my favorite series of all time, Lock and Key.
Nice.
By whatever the fuck Stephen King's son's name is.
Joe Hill.
And an artist who I really like, whose name starts with G, I think. But they're doing a special called Lock and Key Small World. And I'm very excited to re-enter that universe. If you haven't read Lock and Key, you absolutely should. Gabriel Rodriguez is the name of the artist. I did it. So yeah, lots of great books coming out this week. I'm hoping the week after that is the quiet week. I swear, I remember December being very quiet last year.
Yeah, I don't know. I should know that kind of thing, having worked in a comic book store forever, but I don't.
Oh well.
Oh well.
Merry Christmas from all of us at Serious Issues, or happy whatever else you celebrate.
Absolutely. And thanks for an amazing first year, guys.
Yes, thank you so much. It hasn't actually been a year yet, but thank you for...
Nah, but like, you know, we started this year. You know what I mean?
Yep. Well, actually, I'm that guy now. My New Year's resolution is to never do that again. And we'll see you next week for another episode of Serious Issues. And like Siobhan, he's only going to be forced to say for the rest of the year, because I promise I won't do it.
Oh, really?
In 2017.
Then I'll say
unless
it really
there's
seriously.
A fan uproar.
Don't do it, guys. But do stay serious.
I love that catchphrase. How are we going to replace it? Please let us know. SeriousIssues@kingscomics.com. What should Siobhan say instead of stay serious next year? She loves saying it.
I love it.
Hey, this is Levins. Thanks so much for listening to Serious Issues. If you're not completely sick of my voice by now, why don't you check out one of my other podcasts? One is called Hey Fam, and it's about comedy and pop culture, so like comic book movies and comic book TV shows, all that kind of thing. The other one is called The Mitchin, and it's all about the food and bar scene in Sydney. You can find both of them on iTunes or download them directly at yolevins.com/podcasts. Thanks so much for your support, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.